This is WMUK 102.1 FM, music, NPR, local arts, and more from Western Michigan University. 6 minutes now after 10 o'clock. And this Saturday, the Battle Creek Community Chorus and Ars Voce present American Sounds, a program of works by American composers. And one of the pieces I'd be looking forward to is Chichester Psalms by Leonard Bernstein. Here to talk about the program are the two conductors featured on this program, Clayton Parr, who leads the Battle Creek Community Chorus, and Mark Wells, who directs Ars Voce. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Clayton, I'd like to start with you. We haven't met before, and this is your first season as the director of the Battle Creek Community Chorus. So welcome to WMUK, and welcome to Battle Creek music scene.
Thank you. It's been a good first year.
Tell me a little about your background.
Well, I've just started this year as the choral director at Albion College, and the opportunity for the Battle Creek Community Chorus direction came up, and I was excited to have that opportunity and looking forward to the future and collaborations that we can do between Albion and Battle Creek. It's been a long route for me coming home. I was a graduate of Albion way back in the day, and after going off and doing a lot of other things, teaching at Miami of Ohio and at DePaul University in Chicago, the opportunity came to come back home, and it's been good to be here, and the opportunity to work with the community chorus has been an important part of that.
Were you always involved in choral music? Were you a singer as a young musician?
I was mostly an instrumentalist. I sort of came to singing late. I was not a child singer. I believe it or not, even though I've wound up as a tenor, I had an unusually low voice as a child. So I was never in any of the children's choirs. Once everyone else's voice changed and I guess sort of caught up with me, I did a lot more singing in junior high and high school. And at Albion Liberal Arts School, of course, I had an opportunity I was double majoring in music and physics. I went to Albion without any idea that music was what I was going to do as a career. I knew I was going to be involved in it, but that's one of the things that liberal arts allows.
Well, what made you turn the corner toward music?
I suppose it was a couple things. I sang with Mel Larimer, who was the choir director there at the time. Who was a really engaging and charismatic figure. And I also began to see that I couldn't really see myself spending the whole day in a lab coat, in a lab. So it was really about the connection with music and people, and that's sort of led me onward in everything else that I've done.
You said you were an instrumentalist. What was your instrument?
Played low brass, baritone, tuba.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Any favorite composers early on?
Well, I was talking about this with some of my students about the pieces that I listened to and focused on at Albion. You know, there are these pieces that a lot of times young musicians sort of obsess about, and I guess there were two of them that I sort of wore the grooves out on the record. Yes, it was Records at the time, The Rite of Spring, and a piece that was completely new at the time. Music for 18 Musicians by Steve Reich.
Very cool.
So
kind of cutting edge, you liked.
Well, it was cutting edge then, you know.
Not necessarily.
You know that Reich piece is almost 40 years old now, so we've moved in a lot of different directions since then. And then Benjamin Britten, a lot of his pieces, we just did it in the spring concert at Albion, just did Rejoice in the Lamb. Of course, this is Britten's 100th anniversary. So
at Albion, you are now in the role that your former teacher was?
That's right. That's right.
That's great. Yeah.
Choir director and teaching music education and some liberal arts courses as well.
What's the difference between a college ensemble and the Battle Creek Community Chorus?
Well, I'm really enjoying my time with the community chorus. I'm enjoying my time with the students at Albion as well, but it's a different kind of relational aspect. You know, it's after 25 years in higher education, and you realize that there's a musical responsibility, and there's a responsibility for building camaraderie, but there's also a a responsibility that I take pretty seriously with the college students, which is developing all of what they do, their musicianship and their citizenship, to make them employable adults mm-hmm. in every way.
Give them skills that they will use the rest of their life.
Exactly. And with the community course, of course, that's different because those folks are more my age and we look at our time together as an enrichment time, something that should enrich their lives and enrich the lives of the audience. And so it's a different social atmosphere.
I imagine that you would have members of the chorus who've been there for a long time.
Yes, there are several of them who are veterans that have been there for a really long time. But we're always looking for new folks as well. Both Ars Voce and the community chorus are part of the Music Center of South Central Michigan, which is the umbrella organization that also is host to the Battle Creek Symphony. And so we're part of a network in Battle Creek and some of the surrounding areas too, that is designed to provide musical experiences all the way through the life cycle of the folks in the community. And so that's important. So we're not the community chorus is not an auditioned group. So anyone who wants to come in and
self-auditioned,
right? Where anyone who wants to come in and make the commitment to come to regular rehearsals to so that we can prepare adequately for our concerts, anyone is welcome.
Yeah,
and we'll be starting up. This is our last concert of the season. We'll be starting up again with that in the fall.
Music has such a strong tradition in Battle Creek. I mean, it's the oldest symphony orchestra in the state, and this community chorus goes back a few generations. What did you learn about the culture of the community chorus when you came to it?
Well, I had a little bit of an introduction to that back when I was a student at Albion. When I was doing my student teaching, I did that at Battle Creek Central High School, so I had at least some. A little bit of an introduction to the community and the way it was, and it's been a pleasure to come back and really gauge not only the commitment of many of the singers to not just coming in and singing and having a good time, but their understanding and their sensitivity, and their desire to do something that is of as strong an artistic quality as possible has been something that's been really rewarding for me. So that, because there are a lot of y'all come choruses, as we sometimes call them, that are people just want to come in and sing and have a good time. And these folks want to come in and sing and have a good time, but they want to do what they do well. Otherwise they wouldn't have put up with all of the Hebrew that I've been working on with them in Chichester Psalms, which is a little bit of a cut above the usual assignment for these folks.
That's a perfect segue, Clayton. I would like to take a break soon to listen to a movement from Chichester Psalms, but I wonder if you would mind introducing the music that Leonard Bernstein wrote. And you mentioned Hebrew. I'm very curious now.
Right. The psalm settings are written in Hebrew. And of course, that was Bernstein's background. He was commissioned by the dean of the Chichester Cathedral over in England to do these pieces, which was so it's an English commission, American work and an English commission. But this dean of the cathedral requested of him, said, "We would like it very much if there were more than a little bit of West Side Story in this music." So.
For a sacred work?
Yes. So Bernstein took that rather seriously. This was about 6 or 7 years after he'd finished West Side Story, but he actually used some sketches, some music, specifically some music for the Sharks and the Jets that he was not able to use in the musical, and turned it into parts of Psalm 2, Why Did the Nation So Furiously Rage Together, where it fits pretty well in the second movement. But the first movement is more celebratory. It's the most of it is Psalm 100, which we all know as a celebratory piece.
All right, let's hear the opening. Clayton Parr, you called that celebratory. That's not a very apropos word. And a fantastic opening to Chichester Psalms by Leonard Bernstein. If you've just joined us, I'm talking to choral director Clayton Parr, who leads the Battle Creek Community Chorus, and Mark Wells, leader of Ars Voce. And together, these ensembles are presenting American Sounds on Saturday at 7:30 at First Presbyterian Church. Is this a free concert?
No, there are tickets. They're available through the Music Center office or at, I think it's yourmusiccenter.org is our website. $10 for adults, $5 for children, and they'll be available at the door as well.
At First Presbyterian Church, mm-hmm. downtown Battle Creek. Mark, this might be a good place to draw you into the conversation because I see credited under the Chichester Psalms musicians that we heard an orchestral recording here, but it looks like you're the orchestra for
that
this performance.
That is true on this. It has an organ part, percussion, and harp. And it's rather involved, and so certain choices have to be made, but it's very interesting. I enjoy it very much.
You're also leading part of this concert by Ars Voce, as I mentioned.
Yes.
And Ars Voce, how is it different from the Battle Creek Community Chorus?
Well, actually, it has a connection with the Community Chorus in that it started from members of the Community Chorus. Our membership, the people who originally auditioned for the group, they came from the group, and that was kind of the impetus that got the thing started. And still, several people in our group sing in both groups and have done that for many years. One chorus is not enough, so they spend, say, two evenings rehearsing as well. But they're very loyal people, and that for that I'm very, very grateful.
There's so much incredible literature to practice choose from.
Yes, there is.
And that's your job.
Yes, that is. Choosing and figuring out what works in a program, what works as far as programming, what your audience is, what will fit the needs of an audience. That's all you have to take that in consideration when deciding a program or a theme for a program. And sometimes you have to figure out when or if certain singers are going to be available too. Sometimes you have ambitious ideas, and sometimes they're scaled down a little bit just due to the fact that not everyone is available all the time. On the other hand, sometimes when certain other singers do come in, now's the time I'm going to be able to do this piece. So,
I was, as you were talking there, I was going to ask, when you heard the title of the program is American Sounds, what came to mind for you?
Well, what came to mind is I wanted to complement the program. I wanted to find pieces for Ars Voce that would complement the American theme and yet be somewhat different. And so the pieces I've chosen for that, there's one composer, Harold Friedel. I think he was probably at one time better known than he is today, but still wrote some very, very fine music. And in church music circles, he's probably best known for the hymn Draw Us in the Spirit's Tether. And it's a wonderful tune and a wonderful text. Harold Friedel, he was director of music at St. Bartholomew's in New York City for many years. And so they have a very ambitious music program there, have for quite a number of years. And so he wrote the piece we're doing. It's written for what would be an evensong service, where you have what we call a Magnificat setting and a Nunc Dimittis. Those texts are drawn from the Gospel of Luke, which is the Song of Mary, My soul doth magnify the Lord, and the Song of Simeon, Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace. And many composers, both British and American composers, have been inspired by those texts and written some wonderful music based on that.
Sure. Any Latin text is going to have a whole bunch of settings in the canon.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
How does Mr. Friedel approach the text? Is it a sort of comforting kind of way, or?
Well, the text for the Song of Mary is a very exuberant. My soul doth magnify the Lord, and my spirit rejoiceth in God my Savior. And it has these images in it. It has this beginning, which is very, very celebratory and very praise. But it also later on contrasts between he hath put down the mighty from their seat and hath exalted the humble and meek. So you get this contrast of different people. He hath cast down, and so you have that as a part of this text too. So it's not just all celebratory. The Nunc Dimittis, on the other hand, it's very reflective because Simeon, when he saw Jesus, then he said, "Now I can die. Now it's over, Lord. Now let your servant depart in peace." And so it's a very tranquil, and that was his approach to that text. And it's very, very lovely, but very supportive too.
Mr. Friedel is a name I have not heard before. I picture him living in the last half of the 20th century.
No, he died, I believe, in the 1950s. He was not very old when he passed away, but he was known especially in the 40s in New York City. He followed the popular David McKay Williams in St. Bartholomew's in New York. But this was a church that was known for doing major choral works almost every week, I believe. And so he carried on this tradition as well as being a composer himself, but especially in the 40s and the 50s. I believe he also taught at Union Seminary, I believe.
Would we hear a touch of Copland or Howard Hanson or something earlier?
More Hanson, I would think, than Copland. I think that his tendency, musical influences are a little different than say, the Copland trend. You don't find a whole lot of jazz in this particular setting, but it's in the English cathedral tradition, you might say. But it's not strictly just an import. He certainly speaks with an individual voice himself.
Those two pieces begin the portion of Ars Voces program, and it continues with Lonesome Valley. I have here.
Yes, Jesus Walked This Lonesome Valley. It's a traditional American spiritual, and the setting we're doing is by a man named Kenneth Dake. He is director of Marble Collegiate Church, also in New York City, where they have a very active music program and have for quite some time. And it has an alto mezzo soprano solo in that. Dale Boston will be singing that, a member of our group. And lush harmonies, very, very fitting, but yet it has some very simple moments to that. So I found this piece not long ago, and I thought, we need to do this.
I was going to ask how you discovered the piece.
Yes. It's whenever you're looking for music, you read through, say, 40 pieces, and maybe out of the 40 you find one that you know you can do. You might find two others that you wish you could do, and maybe one more that you might think, well, at some point I will do. But the one piece that you actually are able to do, sometimes that's just the price you pay, but it's worth it.
So you will sit down with a stack of music and play it for yourself?
Myself, or read through away from the piano. Sometimes I will do that as well. And just to get a sense of what the piece sounds like, and if I need to play it, I will do that. Sometimes the proof of the pudding's in the eating when it actually comes to life. And from that, then you have to evaluate whether it's for your group. You make those decisions, the difficulty of the group, how long it's going to take, you believe it's to learn such a piece of music, and for what occasion would it be performed. Some pieces that are very, very nice, it might be fine in one setting, you think, but this group is never going to have that opportunity, or there's never going to be an occasion for that. So those are evaluations. Sometimes, though, you can say, I can't do this group, but Clayton, maybe this is a piece that your group can do. And so I pass it on to other my colleagues as well.
And I wanted to touch on the last piece on your program.
Yes.
Oh Beauty, Shine After.
Yes, Oh Beauty, Shine Afar. Wonderful text. This was written by Brooks Grantier about 7 years ago. And Brooks, as many of you know, was the director of the Battle Creek Boy Choir for over 20 years. And he has sung with our group for about 6-7 years. And occasionally he writes pieces for us. And we're very fortunate to have that. And so this is a piece. It has some turbulence towards the middle of the piece, contrasting with some solos, some women's sections, some men's sections, and then it all comes together very tranquilly. And that's how the piece ends.
You share a lot in common with Brooks Grantier as director of choral music and organ, and
yes,
and being kind of pillars of music in Battle Creek.
Well, it's wonderful when you find colleagues that share the kind of interests that you're interested in. And Brooks, I was very fortunate. Both Brooks and his wife Wanza, who works together with me at St. Philip Church in Battle Creek, I'm very fortunate to have such colleagues as well.
Mr. Parr, I would like to Now, since that's still queued up in the CD, to segue back to Chichester Psalms, and since I was talking to Mark about, you know, choosing suitable pieces, I imagine while you listened to that, you were thinking along the same lines. Yes, you audition pieces and choose which ones will work for your group. Did you have any second thoughts about Chichester Psalms?
Well, it's tough. I mean, that's really the thing. I mean, I hadn't really committed to doing it, but when I started to work with the community chorus for the Christmas program, it seemed like the group was ready for a little bit more of a challenge. I mean, you always have to find, there are always safe pieces you can do. And the Chichester Psalms is not one of them, because it's all in Hebrew. And a lot of it is in seven, and you have to count. And,
it's syncopated.
You know, but yeah. This is the other thing that we look for, is that if, especially for a concert that doesn't involve an orchestra, that your regular run of the mill choral program tends to be anthem length pieces, 3 minutes and clap, 3 minutes and clap, 3 minutes and clap, and I've been to a lot of those programs over the years, and it's really nice to have something a little bit larger. To mix that up a little bit more and more extensive. It's also possible to play it too safe. And it seemed to me that this group was a group that wanted to be challenged. They wanted it a little bit more. There's a lot of musical sophistication in this group. And so we went after it, and we started in January, and we started slow, and we did a lot of sectionals, and we sent people home with materials for practicing at home, especially the language, and I think that we've built something that's going to be enjoyable for both singers and audience.
Well, conducting the work, that must be a little intimidating too.
Well, I've conducted it a few times before, so it's the big challenge is pedagogical and a challenge in terms of assembly, you know, with all the disparate parts, and you what you do in preparation, of course, is the job of the conductor to be a steadying influence, and to avoid any kind of surprises in performance. At least not surprises of the unpleasant kind.
Did you go to Mark Wells right away to have him play organ on this piece?
I think we talked pretty early on, so that he had a chance to work on it. And we also have who I think are going to be some really good collaborators. Sylvia Norris, who's the harpist with the Battle Creek Symphony, is coming down to play the harp part, and Samuel Gould on a very challenging percussion part. I am not very good at look, because I'm not a percussionist. I'm not very good at looking at percussion parts and telling how many players are necessary. This part says one player, but there are, I think, seven or eight or nine different instruments. So he's going to have his hands full. But,
Again, the concert's Saturday at 7:30, and tickets are available at the door. It's at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Kalamazoo. And more information, or like I said, Battle Creek. And more information is available online. You can simply Google Battle Creek Community Chorus. It's at Music Center.
Yourmusiccenter.org.
Yourmusiccenter.org. And learn more about the concert, or just stay tuned. I'd like to get back to Chichester Psalms and Movement 2, perhaps. This has a solo in it.
Right. This is a solo that Bernstein explicitly said this is a treble solo that should be sung by a boy or a countertenor. We have a countertenor coming in, a young man named Paul Bork, who's going to be singing this. This is music that Bernstein originally wrote for, he was a setting of a Thornton Wilder play, Skin of Our Teeth, which was going to be his project for some time off that he had from his job as conductor of the New York Philharmonic to compose. That project fell to the wayside, or was not able to be completed, and then the commission for Chichester came. So he used that to set the very famous 23rd Psalm, of course, The Lord is My Shepherd, and then balance that with this music that we talked about before, Psalm 2, Why Do the Nations So Furiously Rage Together, sung by the men with the music that he recycled that he was not able to use in West Side Story.
Second movement of Chichester Psalms, and my guests are Clayton Parr, director of the Battle Creek Community Chorus, and Mark Wells, director of Ars Voce and organist on this performance, which is coming up Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Battle Creek. If you've just tuned in, this concert is called American Sounds, and it starts with this major work by Leonard Bernstein and continues with lots of glorious work by American composers. Clayton, any final words on Chichester Psalms, or shall we move on to the rest of the program?
No. For those who don't know the work, of course, you've heard the first two movements. The final movement is much more introspective. Bernstein chose the psalm, O Lord, my eyes are not raised too high. I do not concern myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. And then ends with the Hine Matov, how great it is when men dwell together in unity.
What are some of the enunciation or vowel sound issues when it comes to Hebrew?
Well, actually, I think compared to a lot of other languages, Hebrew is a pretty easy language to sing in, really. The hard thing, of course, is for non-Hebrew speakers is getting the ah, the ch sounds. But the vowels, at least, are all a, e, I, o, u. The other challenge, of course, is that Hebrew is a language where the letters of the alphabet only designate consonants, and vowels are designated through a series of diacritical marks and other things, so that there are some places where there's a consonant and no vowel, so that it's just l or u or something like that. And so that's one thing that singers of Hebrew always have to work with, coming up with something so that we can phonate and make a singing vowel where there isn't actually one.
You said you'd conducted performances of this before.
Mm-hmm.
Has your understanding, appreciation, interpretation changed over time? And how?
Yeah, I suppose it has. Like a lot of people, it's because of its vigor. I suppose that it's the kind of piece that young people and young conductors are attracted to. So I don't do everything as fast, I think, maybe as I did years ago. And also I would hope to think that I'm better at taking the longer view and looking at the arc and the architecture of the piece, rather than just being attracted to the fast and high and loud and exciting bits.
It's got those.
It sure does.
But Bernstein was an architect as well. Mm-hmm. So, well, let's look at the second half of the program, which starts with a collaboration.
Right. This in looking at the second half of the program, I thought it was a good idea to show a lot of the range of American history and choral music. And so because of that, I was really attracted to this piece by William Billings, The Rose of Sharon. And I also thought because of its structure, it has a lot of short phrases that contrast full choir sections with bits for solos or small or one or two sections at a time, that it might be a good piece for community chorus and Ars Voce to collaborate on, going back and forth. So Ars Voce has their half of the piece, and we're sort of trading off little phrases. So it should be a lot of fun.
It is who's conducting, you or Mark?
We haven't even really talked about that yet. I suppose we'll take turns. I don't think I'll conduct Ars Voce. So that the idea is that Ars Voce is run on a chamber music model, and they'll sing their bits. And when it's time for community chorus to come in on their phrases, I'll conduct them. But I don't think I'm really conducting Ars Voce. We're just setting a tempo and letting them go.
Ars Voce by a chamber ensemble, you're expected to self-direct after you've prepared?
Well, what I do is I hate to have to, by conducting, give up having to sing, because when you conduct, actually, you're dependent on others making music for you. That's kind of your instrument in a way. And so over the years, and also due to the fact that tenors are a rather rare commodity, and I'm a tenor, so what I have done has been, especially when we do a cappella pieces, is I conduct and sing at the same time. So I stand on one side and we are in a semicircle, but that seems to have worked quite well over the years, I think.
Wow, that must be a pleasant sight to have the ensemble face the audience and the conductor being part of the ensemble like that.
Well, I find it a delight, and being able to hear people and be a part of this particular group, it's been a joy.
Back to this program, we've touched on Billings, who I associate somehow with the Revolution or something.
Right, he's a Revolutionary era composer, 1746 to 1800. So, but he also is an important. He represents an important passage in the musical education in this country, because a lot of that during his time, musical education was passed around by itinerant singing masters who went from town to town and would just stay for a series of short residencies and teaching people songs and teaching people about singing, mostly for use in church. And then they'd travel on, and because a lot of these communities were on the frontier and musical instruments were not plentiful, this was a cappella music, and it was designed so that people could learn to sight read as they did it. And Billings was one of those teachers.
You had Leonard Bernstein, a master of musical theater, on the first part of the program, and here's another master of musical theater, George Gershwin.
Right. It's Gershwin is such an important part of musical history that it's nice to have access to be able to perform some of these things. And this medley from Porgy and Bess that we're doing is one that's been around for a long time. Clay Warnick, I think he arranged it maybe in the 1950s or something like that. So it's our chance to sing things like Summertime and I've Got Plenty of Nothing and that kind of thing. So.
And then we have, I see some Aaron Copland and Morton Lauridsen, Charles Ives. And
always important to put some Ives on the program. And this piece indeed. is the Circus Band is one that's really a whole lot of fun in Ives' individualistic and twisted way, telling the story of a kid excited about the circus coming to town. And it includes a lot of Ives' rhythmic displacements, and it's four-hand piano, so our accompanist, our community chorus, Sarah Cleland, will be joined by Mark on this, and Ives even throws in a fraternity song at the end that kind of crashes over everything.
Of course he does. some folk songs, American arrangements, and then I have a soft spot for an American composer here, Randall Thompson.
Right. Those of us of a certain age grew up with Thompson really being at the center of choral repertoire. And times have changed and fashions have changed, but I think that the quality of the music that Randall Thompson wrote certainly has not changed. So it's when I'm thinking about an American program, I think it's important to include one of his pieces on there, and we'll be doing Last Words of David, which I think is still one of his finest and enduring compositions.
Well, gentlemen, we are closing in on the end of the hour, so we have this Randall piece to play to take us out, but I want to give you the opportunity to have any final thoughts on Saturday's program. Mark?
Come to the program. You will enjoy it. You'll hear a variety, and it will be an experience. It'll be a wonderful experience for you.
And a concert's nothing without people to play for, so.
Yes, indeed. You will hear some fine musicians. Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful musicians. Clayton?
I would say the same thing. It's you're not only welcome to come to the concert, but once we start up in the fall, if you're around Battle Creek, you're welcome to come and join us. The Music Center, this is one of the many of the programs that the Music Center has that allows people to maintain music as part of their lives, not just as listeners, but to experience all of the benefits that we know come from making your own music throughout your life.
And lots more online at yourmusiccenter.org, where you can find out about the chorus, Ars Voce, and other ensembles available in Southwest Michigan. And thank you, gentlemen, for coming in this morning.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.